Transmitting from South Central Texas since 2007, this is Anomaly with Jen and Angela, talking about your favorite sci-fi fantasy topics. We're the halfway point between Muggle and Geek.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity. Peculiarity. Irregularity. Inconsistency. Incongruity. A rarity.
Hello and welcome to the Anomaly Podcast. I'm Jen. Hey, Angela's out for a while, but don't worry, she'll be back soon. In the meantime, thank you to our guests, Rico Dosti from Treks and Sci-Fi and Rick Pete. He's an Anomaly listener, supporter, and friend of Angela and I. Red alert! This transmission of Anomaly contains spoilers for Brandon Sanderson's novel, Skyward. If you're looking for a non-spoiler review, please listen to part one first. Okay, guys, let's spoil it.
Basically, this last vestiges of humanity out there in the stars, they're on some kind of weird planet that's surrounded with all this debris, and there's this enemy out there called the Krell that they have to constantly fight off. It pretty much follows the story of this young girl. I guess she's supposed to be like late teens, like 17,
she's 17.
Something.
Mm-hmm.
Her father was this ace, you know, super pilot. The story goes when she was younger, he betrayed, them. She's got this big shadow kind of throughout her life of a huge battle that took place in the past that he chickened out and kind of took off. And she's out to kind of prove that wrong. She wants to get into flight school. There's a lot of things that are getting in her way, but she doesn't give up. She runs into this old friend of her father's that kind of paves the way and helps her get into the school. It's a lot about them learning how to fly these fighters and the characters, her little group, which is called Skyward. There you go. She kind of overreacts to a lot of things because she has this, you know, everyone calls her a coward. Everyone in her family is a coward. So she kind of overcompensates and she keeps people at arm's length a lot because of that and is kind of a loner. She's out there on her own a lot on this planet. But then she slowly changes, you know, this squad becomes sort of a little group and they become friendly. But there's so many obstacles for poor Spencer. You know, they won't even let her stay at the base, you know, or whatever, you know, with the other pilots to be, which is terrible. You know, she has to go out and live in this cave and all this stuff. And then during all this time, you know, as these young kids, I'll just say, are learning to be pilots, these enemies are still attacking. And that gets them just sort of like almost like Star Wars, which this has a very Star Wars feel to it. They get sort of swept up and have to go out there and start fighting really before they're ready at times. And that's hard to listen to because, you know something bad's going to happen. You know, she loses some of her friends. And it's just really interesting to see how her character and the other characters change and evolve over the course of the book. And you're just rooting for her so much, right? Even though she kind of messes up sometimes, you kind of like, no, don't do that. I do like her name for Jerkface, though. Yeah, I think I've heard you guys say that
yeah,
before.
Jerkface.
You know, there are these privileged, what are they called in the book, you guys?
First citizens.
First citizens, yeah. Who are basically the children of people that were the pilots that were in this big Battle of Alta, right?
Yeah.
They're sort of like legacy, you know, they get sort of into flight school period. Others have to take this massively difficult test. And so they're like the hoi polloi, if you guys know what that term is.
No, explain.
Hoi polloi is, I don't know, is that a real term? Rick Pete, have you heard the term hoi polloi before?
But I've heard it.
I use it. It's really from my love of the Three Stooges, but they're like the rich society people. You know, like they're the people who have the rich society parties. They can't be bothered with the little people, and they're the elite. And so Spencer thinks that, you know, those people and their children who are getting into flight school with, you know, no problem, no test and whatever, she puts them into a category like they're just all snobs and she doesn't care for them, of course. So, you know, there are all these obstacles that she has to overcome. But of course, she's an ace pilot and she holds on to, you know, so much that her father wasn't a coward. And then it gets into this whole thing about there's something genetically different about her father and possibly about Spencer herself.
Yeah, she's having to wear all the kids have to wear flight suits and helmets when they get into the simulators. Hers has sensors in it so that they can figure out what the defect is.
Yeah,
that
what's
they
wrong with her?
The coward defect, so they can detect it in other people and root them out before they become full pilots. Because as we find out later, something mysterious surrounds what happened with her father in that incident that branded him a coward.
These people are not living very well. I mean, for the most part, some of them are okay.
They're just
and better
surviving.
Off, but a lot of them are just basically barely getting by.
Just getting by. And that's the interesting thing. It doesn't seem like there's an actual plan to win the war. They're just trying to keep the Krell from destroying them because they have basically like nuclear bombs that they're trying to drop on several of the communities there, which one of them is Igneous. Each clan from the ship they came from actually has a different cavern that surrounds Igneous. I think Igneous is the place where they build the ships, correct?
Yeah, Igneous is where she's from, and that's where they build the ships. And then Alta is above Igneous. Going back in that history that we learn, the reason why they have all these different colonies and different caverns was because if there was too many gathered in one spot, it would usually trigger the Krell to come and bomb them. Right, so they had to be spread out all over the place on the ground so that they never, I guess, presented a big enough footprint to attract the Krell.
Throughout the book, I'm wondering, why don't they have a plan to win? And that ends up being something that the cadets start asking their teacher, who is Cobb, and he reminds me a lot of, what's his name, from Hunger Games.
Woody Harrelson plays him in the movie,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I can't remember what his name is, yeah.
Haymitch. He reminded me of Haymitch. He's jaded, he's older.
Yep.
He used to be her dad's wingmate. Later
right.
in the story, you hear more about why he is the way he is. He won't fly. He teaches his students differently than the other flight instructors. He doesn't teach them how to use disruptors right away. He wants them to learn the essentials of flying and how to use the light lance, which is super interesting technology for this book that they use to grab debris for use in their construction of their ships, but they also use it in their battles to swing around and to throw stuff into the enemies. And
yeah, they can sort of use it as a kind of like a grappling
like a cool
thing.
Tractor
yeah,
beam.
It's a tractor beam or a grappling hook kind of thing. And they have smaller versions of it on their wrists that Spencer uses to hunt rats. And she's not supposed to have it because it belonged to her dad and he gave it to her before he left. What is another thing? They use pulses
EMPs. They use an EMP, yeah.
Yeah, to bring down shields. But then they have to like reboot their own shields after they do that.
Right. Yeah, they have really interesting tactics. It would be very cool to see in a movie where they and it makes it a lot more of a team fight, you know, with these kinds of tactics, because somebody has to sort of swing in, use their EMP, which puts them vulnerable. They lose their shield, right? And then they have to depend on somebody else in their team to shoot the other guy before basically they get shot, because it takes them a minute or something to reignite their shield. So there's a lot of teamwork, and it's a very group type of flying rather than just a hot shot. And it shows in the early parts about the book of Spencer tries to be a little bit too much of a hot shot. And you kind of can kind of see it coming, but you're happy when it happens, is that she starts to work with the other people more, right? They start to bond and they start to form a much more cohesive team while at the same time losing, you know. Cobb tells them like at the beginning, what, they'll be lucky with one or two of them graduate out of their group of, what is it, 10 to start with, I think.
Yeah.
And some, he says, you'll wash out, you'll quit, and some might be not even alive anymore. And turns out to be pretty much true.
Yeah, we lose two right off the bat in the same fight, right? They're not supposed to be a part of the battles yet because they're still cadets. But the DDF, which is the leadership in the military, is so desperate at this point in the story. They're losing and they really need pilots. And they're starting to use cadets now, too. So they were up in a training mission whenever the Krell started attacking. I think one of them had a bomb, and the two of them were killed during this huge battle. Yeah, and it hits Spencer really hard. It hits all of them very hard. And Cobb, you get to learn a little bit more about him during this time too.
Yeah, and he's I like his character a lot. I really did, because the he's hard with all of them, but for a good reason. He pushes them hard to be the best so that they don't die. He doesn't want them to die. And that, you know, shows that he actually, even though he kind of comes off sometimes as he doesn't care, but he actually cares probably more than most. And he really feels, you know, sort of a bond to Spensa, because like you said, Jen, that's the daughter of his old wingmate. And even though it comes out, you know, later on about things aren't quite what they've been reported, there were things that happened with the aliens that messed them up, and she is sort of affected by it. I like the fact that even though things weren't great, he still gives her a chance.
If you're enjoying getting weekly releases of Anomaly, please consider donating $5, $10, or more a month to help us with the cost of editing and hosting the show. We're in need of about $60 more per episode to edit and master our shows. We're getting super busy these days with work and family, and in order to keep Anomaly rolling on a consistent basis, we need to pass the production responsibilities on to a professional. If you can help, even just a little, we'll thank you on the show, add you to a supporters page on our website, and send you the full version of the original Anomaly intro music, television segment track, and the outro. You'll also get a chance to be a guest on the show when we have listener roundtables. As always, thank you to everyone who's listening. Thanks again to those of you who already support the show. And of course, thank you to those of you who are subscribed, digging what we're doing, and sharing our episodes. We couldn't do this without you. To donate on a monthly basis, all you have to do is head over to anomalypodcast.com and click on Donate at the top of the page.
He, of anyone, knows that even the most, except for like Ironsides, right? Even though he was right there and he knows that her father had, you know, something happened to him, that he's still going to give her a chance. And he still knows and recognizes that she's a great pilot, that she has, you know, the ability to pull people together too. You start to see her leadership come into play. We're all rooting for her. And then, you know, at some point early on in the book, she finds this crashed ship that's unlike any other ship that's out there.
M-Bot.
Good old M-Bot, which is, there is nothing more fun, or there probably are more fun things, but, you know, when you find something that has a computer personality kind of, which this ship has sort of a, artificial, let's call it artificial intelligence, artificial personality. And that just leads to all kinds of fun stuff. I cannot actually feel things for you, Spensa, but let me try to cheer you up.
Yeah.
You know, and then he'll make some stupid, dumb joke or whatever. You look very good today, Spensa.
You have nice shoes.
You have nice shoes. I get, that's right. That's what he says. You know, like, you have nice shoes. I gave you a compliment. You should feel better now, Spensa. Yeah. And that part was great with how that happens. And, you know, she finds this ship, and then her friend Raj, is that how you say his name?
Riggs.
Rig.
Yeah.
But anyway, he tried to be a pilot, even though he really didn't, you know, wasn't for him. But he ends up repairing the ship with Spensa, because he ends up, we find out pretty quickly that he's basically a pretty much an ace engineer. Plus, he gets involved in the engineering areas at the base, so he can get access to tools and parts and stuff.
And he ended up getting the highest score out of all of the cadets. So he gets recruited right away, like you were saying, by the people who make and design the ships.
But when she finds this crashed ship, and once she starts to investigate it a little, and it's advanced and it has this artificial intelligence, and I'm like, oh, she's going to fix this thing up somehow, and it's going to be important to the story. And of course, that's what happens. But the
not
way
the
it,
way we think.
Not quite the way we think, right. Which I like the fact that that's one of another point of the way he writes his books a lot. He'll sort of set you up like, yeah, this is the way it's going, but it will kind of go that way, but there'll be a little spin on it that is unique and I really like that you get a little surprised by. So with M-Bot, you know, that's sort of what happens. And by the end of the book, did we really still know exactly where that ship came from? Yeah.
The pilot that he had before was human. It was a part of maybe a fleet before the war, because they crashed on Detritus 80 years before, and I think this ship is even older than that.
That ship was created by humans back during the big, you know, I don't want to call it the intergalactic war.
Yeah.
But, you know, when Earth basically went to war with everybody else in the galaxy.
So when technology was more advanced than they are now.
Yes.
Because correct. They've lost so much since they've been on the, you know, run kind of.
And, you know right. what it kind of reminded yeah. me of that part of it? Reminded me of Battlestar Galactica.
A lot of this does
technology,
actually.
Technology, yeah, has been lost due to the fact that
you've got this big enemy trying to wipe humanity out, you know. So there's a lot of Battlestar feel to this, yeah.
Imbod reminded me of Data from TNG, right? Because, and he doesn't understand necessarily all of the human, you know, idiosyncrasies around relationships and emotion and all of that. So he's a perfect foil to what's going on inside of Spensa. What's happening to Spensa, right? So he doesn't understand. So he gets to be the person, he gets to be the reader to ask the questions that we are asking because it makes perfectly good sense for him to ask it because he doesn't get why are you upset about this and why are you even doing this? So I like that he's in a way a father figure for her from a support perspective, just like Cobb is in a way a father figure yeah. for her. Right, so you've got these two totally different personalities who are basically there to support her, mm-hmm. And I like the fact that Imbod. There's a scene in the book where Spensa goes and talks to her grandmother, and her grandmother explains to her the significance of the gift, you know, of something that her great grandmother had, which allowed ships back in the day to travel large spaces of, you know, large distances instantaneously, almost like from the Battle Galactica jump concept, right?
It also helped to work on the ships because it was her clan that had it, you know, this talent that allowed them to, they were the that worked on the engines.
So her great-grandmother had it. I really believe that her grand has it.
Yeah.
And her father has it, and yeah. now she has it. And I remember thinking that when they first talked about the Imbod, and they were talking about his systems, and there's this one system that I can't remember, was it the Cytonic Drive or something mm-hmm. like that, that was offline, and really could never figure out where it is. Like, what is this thing? I can't find it anywhere in the ship. And it turns out that this has this human component in order for it to work. And as soon as they had that scene with Gran, then I knew it was her. Like, she was that piece. And even though she didn't know it.
Yeah,
you know,
she's
and we don't
what
see
integrates.
That till the end of the book.
Yeah.
But I really
you almost called it a movie.
I almost called it a movie, right?
Yeah.
But it is, yeah, I really like that ship. And I know at the end of it, I kept thinking, I can't wait till the second book because I want to see what happens. And, you know, and one of the things I hope doesn't happen, honestly, in the next book, I don't want all the DDS ships to have Imbod's capabilities. I mean, they could have better shielding, maybe, but I don't want them to have all the stuff that he has. I think that sets him apart. And as a writing vehicle, I think they should keep that. I thought that was really well done, and the way they introduce it, and she grows sort of as Imbod is getting repaired. She's growing in her ability as a pilot in flight school.
Yeah.
So they both get to a certain point, and then they get to a certain point, and then Imbod's like, you know what? I'm shutting down because you're going to get me fighting, and I'm not. I don't do that.
Yeah, his directive is not to fight.
Yeah, my prime directive is I don't fight, and so I'd rather shut down and be and not do anything than be dragged into that. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, and forcing her to think about that. And then obviously at the end, you know, he makes a human choice.
I do love how you picked up on the fact that Imbod is going through a transition sort of at the same time as Spensa, because she's not only changing as far as her abilities as a pilot, but also in how she thinks and how she gets along with others, you know, and also what she's learning at the same time about her dad. Because this is basically an action-packed sci-fi mystery. There's like a big piece of the puzzle that's missing throughout the story, and we need to find out why everyone thinks her dad's a coward and what really happened. And Imbod kind of also is helping her figure out where they came from, because nobody understands really a lot about Earth. They just have these stories that Gran tells Spensa that she is so It's so essential to who she is. She identifies with the warriors and the stories that her grand-grand tells. At some point, she becomes a little bit more wise, Spinsa does, and says, you know, how could I be related to all those people? They're all from different cultures, and some of them aren't even maybe real people. And she said, but they're from Earth, and you're from Earth, and they're part of your DNA, basically. So, like I said, they don't know a lot about where they came from or why they're there. They just have a limited memory, and Imbot kind of helps Spinsa put some of that together. Because she hears music for the first time because of Imbot.
Yeah.
They don't have time to make art because they're just trying to survive.
They couldn't have a whole bunch of people gathered to make music because that would attract the Krell and the Krell would attack. So, yeah, it's funny. It's funny as you say that because I'm thinking, you know, she's learning and growing and things are becoming more clear to her. And Imbot's writing new subroutines to do this, writing new subroutines to do that. So he's improving himself, and at the same time, she's improving herself. When I think about the end of the book, and I wonder, the second book, man, that's got a lot to deal with. It's got a lot to unpack. What really happens when Spinsa, because at the end of the book, Spinsa has this experience that her father had, and they fly out into space to see what's on the other side.
That's something we haven't talked about. They can't even leave the planet because the Krell keeps them back and the debris field prevents them from leaving. But you were saying, as you were saying, she's able to do as her dad did and break through that barrier.
They have this experience with the Krell, and Imbot is able to pull down some information out of the Krell systems. That was the only part of the movie, of the book, that I thought, really? That easily?
I don't think it was that easy. It wasn't, remember, because he was like, let me break into there. Oh, in, and yeah. Now I'm out.
Yeah, he didn't get very much. He got in, but then he got slammed back out.
What he did get is a ton of the history that these people don't have. That they don't, they didn't know what the Krell were. Well, now they know what the Krell's purpose is.
Yes.
Right? So there's, and I'm sure there's more than what we were told in the book of what all he brought back. Right? Mm-hmm. But that's going to cause ripples in their society for a long time. Just that little information would totally change the perspective of who the Krell are, what their purpose is. To me, that was a huge revelation to put at the end of the book to lead into the second book. So I really want to see what comes to pass. Obviously, she has this gift that they're probably still afraid of. Because they were afraid of it even before they got to this planet. The officer's relationship to the engineers, you know, and to her great-grandmother who had the gift, it was already a difficult relationship. They were already afraid, you know, maybe envious, maybe worried that the people who have this gift would you know, somehow maybe revolt and take control or take power or whatever. Spinsa probably isn't the only one who has the gift.
Definitely
right?
not.
So now, instead of squelching these people, they can't squelch them anymore.
They need them. Yeah, they may be the key to actually winning and leaving that ball of dust and rock.
She obviously, near the end, in the last, you know, big battle and all that, you know, she starts to be able to hear them, kind of anticipate what they're going to do. She seems to be able to resist this control that happened to her father. You want like about every pilot to be like her, right? Pretty much by the end, you know, I think Imbot, like you said, Rick, about it, we'll have to see what they do and what they can adapt to the other ships in the next book, because Imbot seems to have the ability to sort of filter out the way they were trying to, what they did and control their father, because he was in a normal, whatever regular ship will say. So he puts up some kind of barriers or filters or whatever that blocks their control, right? So she gets sort of like some of the good stuff. She can learn what they're going to move and how they're going to, because they operate sort of like a hive kind of a thing a little bit, where those other ships that are out there fighting against them are being sort of controlled. They're not like independently thinking pilots. They call them
drones. So
So the, you know, point being, like you said, Jen, I think is that, and Rick, that if there are others out there, I don't think it's going to be very many.
It's kind of like Jedi in the Force.
I think it's going to be pretty darn rare, but there may be others that have this this ability or this, you know, they keep calling it a defect, but, you know, it's not really a defect. It's an advantage because not only does it help her fight the Krell, it's also their only basically way in the future off the planet because it allows her, you know, more or less spore drive, hyperdrive, whatever other little way of jumping across the galaxy you want to call it. Without that, they're stuck there pretty much. There's that critical, very cool point. The last, you know, bit of the battle, you know, was pretty exciting and emotional and, you know, where she just jumps, but she doesn't really realize what she does. Everything's starting to go bad and it looks like she's going to die, you know, all of a sudden blink. Any more pilots they can find like that would be great. I just think, and I wanted to say, so did we ever think that she was going to kiss Jerkface?
Yes.
I need to bring that up because they kept dropping these little hints like, maybe Jerkface isn't so bad. How come I feel these funny feelings when I'm around Jerkface? Spencer, are you falling in love with no? But I just was like, there was that one last scene where they were talking, and I'm like, what does Chris say on your show? Book sex. Well, didn't think that was going to happen because
no. Brandon Sanderson never puts that in his books.
You know, they're like teens. That would have been kind of pushing it a bit. I think they hugged a few times, a couple of nice hugs, but I was just like, are they putting these two together? Well, we'll see what happens in the next book.
When she's not decking him, yeah.
Yeah, true.
I got to where I liked Jorgen.
Because he kind of sticks up for her eventually.
He's
a jerk at first, of course, but
they all have their own problems that they're dealing with. And even though he comes from privilege, his whole life is scheduled for him and his parents have like decided his path for him. And all he wants to do is be helpful and help his people survive. And he and Spensa discover they both basically have the same motivation and they have to learn to get along at first and then they become friends. And it kind of feels like they're warming up to a relationship status, but we'll have to see how that goes because I think Sanderson's pretty good at, you know what I mean? Like he likes curveballs. So we'll have to see about that.
They did a good job with her interacting with all the rest of the squadron. I was a little surprised. I don't know about either of you, but I was a little surprised at how it was fairly ruthless where, you know, hey, there's another one that's going to get killed and there's another one dead and there's another,
that's why it felt like the Hunger Games at times.
You know, they didn't pull too many punches on it. He was telling us and showing us that this is not good.
It's dangerous.
Yeah, it's very dangerous. And the fact that they were putting these pilots out there.
The last vestige of humanity is on Detritus right now. They're fighting for survival and becoming quite desperate.
And how much did we all hate Ironsides?
Oh my gosh.
Or were you guys sort of like,
hard job.
Yeah, she's got a hard job, but we all have kids. You know, I have a hard time thinking that for someone to be that hard with a kid, even if her father ran from this battle, but you know, and it doesn't turn out that everybody is like on her, like you're not responsible for what your father, your mother did or whatever. But Ironsides is just like all over her.
She's afraid.
Yeah.
And being afraid makes people do things like that. But also it speaks to the unique situation of their planet right now and the colony in that they take kids and they make them warriors. I mean, right out of high school or whatever, there's not a lot of coddling going on because people have to survive. So, and also, like I said, she's afraid. She was basically Jorgen to Chaser, Spence's dad, in their squadron. And she saw what happened. He did not flee the battle. He turned on them after going through the debris field into space and coming back down changed. And that defect that they're so worried about, they believe is hereditary. And the lie that they had told about her dad being a coward ended up being a way to protect Spensa and her family from what really happened, because it would have been much worse.
Right.
And so the way she treats Spensa is to protect people from what she believes could happen with Spensa.
Although I was never really completely clear on why it was so important for them to not say what really happened.
It's part of the mystery. That would be a little bit,
but I mean, it's like, okay, this battle happened. It's all been recorded, right? She gets that recording of the battle and finds out that no, he didn't just run. He left, but then he comes back and I was like, okay, all right, I get you sort of lied about that, but I don't think the military would do it just to like protect a girl of the guy who did that, you know, like in other words, so well,
there's
defined.
There's a lot of different reasons because not only is Judy Ironsides maybe protecting the family from the fate of what would have happened if everyone knew that her father was a traitor, but also there could be widespread panic if people realize that whatever made him do that could be in any one of them. And then they won't trust each other. In order to succeed, they have to rely on one another.
Yeah, so, that's true. They seem to be implying that it's only maybe is very few people that have this, whatever they want to call it.
They don't have any way to detect it, right? So,
well, they sort of do by the end.
But the only person they can really test this on is Spinsa.
Well, so far, because right. They need a control. They need to know what to look for before they can start looking for it in everyone else, right?
But since her father is the only one that had this happen, right? This is the first time that we know of that a pilot has betrayed his own people and shot down his own people.
Well, they had that mutiny on the ship, remember?
I doubt any of them even. I mean, I think her grand remembers that.
Yeah, they kind of blame, though. They blame the engineers for.
They blame the engineers.
Yeah, they blame
everybody who has this ability, basically, right? Because this ability gives them both the ability to jump.
I think this ability was buried. You have to figure that maybe, you know, the generation, like the grandmother generation, they may still remember about what this is. But they are clearly not teaching this from generation to generation. So this knowledge about this gift is probably largely gone. I mean, Ironsides doesn't understand what this gift is either. She just is worried that now the Krell have the ability to control our people. So we don't want them to get too far high, because then the Krell will turn them into weapons and they'll come and they'll start shooting our people down. Right. So I think they're developing this methodology using her as their guinea pig because she's related to Chaser. They're going to figure out how to test for this so then we can weed these people out of the DDF so we don't have to worry about this happening a second time.
Yeah. Right. Except I think, like I was saying earlier, that they actually have to weed them into the DDF.
Well, now they totally do.
Because, you know, it gives her a huge advantage. And if they can figure out how to replicate, maybe not MBOT, but that jump drive thing. Just think about what happens in Discovery, you know, when you can just jump away from a battle and jump behind your enemy or whatever.
Well, it's not just the ability to jump from point to point.
Sure.
And it's instant. But also she almost has force ability where she anticipates the moves of the Krell. But we realize that the Krell are mechanical. Because at the end of the story, we find out that they are drones that the jailers use because they're not warriors. And they send these drones in. And so it's possible she's able to detect them because they're machinery and she's anticipating.
I didn't get the idea that they were total machinery. Did you guys both get that idea?
Yeah.
That all those ships were just totally all mechanical? I didn't. Well, I thought they were both. I thought they were sort of like a Cylon thing where there was organic and mechanical, I guess.
I think that's why they didn't know much about them.
Yeah. I mean, you could just, you know, feed everyone the whole plot of the book. But yeah, really great. I got pretty worked up and pretty emotional during that whole last battle scene. And then Cobb coming in out of the blue. And I was in my car and I'm like literally like cheering to my, you know, yes, yay.
I'm doing the data fist
in the air kind
exactly.
of.
You know.
She gets shot down twice.
Is it only twice?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think so. Yeah, she gets in her
she
own ship.
She ejected the first time.
Yeah, the first time. The second one, she gets in this dinged up thing.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly. And somehow she's still managing to stay ahead of these guys, even in that old ship. Yeah. Damaged ship. Yeah.
And at the end, I love how she comes in. I could picture it, a blip on a radar that Ironsides is watching on the control center. You know, it's kind
What's
of like I see the space. On Star Wars, when everyone's gathered around the holograph of all the X-Wings going after the Death Star, watching, and then they realize it's the defect. They're scared at first.
It's like Ironside's, I can't get rid of you. You keep popping up. Yeah.
But she's so glad because all of the pilots are basically being wiped out. And the only ones left are the ones
they cut.
Yeah. Or who quit, like Kimmelin, who I love, is a sniper. And they never let her use those abilities because one of the tactics of the Krell is to go after who they presume is the most talented in the squadron. Her strategy throughout training was to hang back and snipe from a distance because she doesn't have the piloting skills that most of the other cadets have. And she becomes a liability at one point, which gets Hurl killed. And to have that happen to her, it was...
But they all bond together at the end, you know? They're all, like, running for ships. You know, you have all this playing in your mind like a movie of...
Yeah.
You know, they're running for what's his name's the other rich kid who has they have private ships and like, doesn't your family have some private ships you could just grab and use? Oh, yeah. Let's go get those.
Well, the Ironsides called for the families to send their private ships in as backup, but they all fled.
They're leaving.
So it ends up that everyone who ostracized Spence and her family are actually cowards too. They're just human, which is something that Kimmelin brings up at one point when Spence admits to her and to Hurl and who's the girl who's the pacifist? I can't think of her name at this point. It's escaping me, but they kind of sneak her into their quarters because she's not allowed to stay with the pilots. She has to stay.
Oh yeah, right. That's a great part of it where they basically let her come in.
Yeah, they sneak her in and then she decides never to let them do that again because she doesn't want them to be in trouble for it. But anyway, she admits to them that she feels scared sometimes. And Kimmelin goes, "You mean you're human?"
that's one part that I had, you know, like when everyone says coward, 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 and I'm like, "Are you guys everyone's afraid at some time,
yeah.
Right? So it's like that, you know, but really
that's the difference between someone who is a hero and someone who is just stupid, who just goes into things, you know, guns a-blazing, because heroes always have a little bit of fear that they have to overcome, you know, to save people.
And yeah, you don't want to not have that because you want to not get killed.
So I was going
to
say, it keeps you alive.
Yeah. If you're not a little afraid, you're just going to go in there and you're going to mess up and that. So, there's a lot in the book, but it flows well. It's all handled real well. I like there wasn't any stuff in there that I'd be like, oh, we didn't really need to know about this, or it's you know, this guy's a great writer and it shows. So very much excited to read the next one and happy to talk about it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the next one too. And Mr. Sanderson, if by any chance you're listening to this episode, contact us. We'd love to have you on the show.
Find an email link and just, you know, figure out a way to send your link to this show once you post it up.
I have emailed him once to ask for an interview, but he's super busy. But
he's
got to
write these books as quick as he does because he writes fast.
He's a writing machine.
Yeah.
And he doesn't just put out anything either. It's amazing.
Yeah.
How much talent it takes to not only, you know, write that many, be so prolific, but write such good books.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm hoping that most people listening now, you know, have actually read it I think we said some things, but maybe not too many big, I don't know how to balance it really, you know, when you're into this section. I know people do listen, but still go read it if you haven't. It's real good. So
we want you to be able to join this conversation too. You're not just a listener, you're part of this group. We want you to feel comfortable enough to write in and chime in, you know, with your points on the book. And you can do that by sending a voice memo recorded on your smartphone or smart device, or you can email us the old-fashioned way and send it to girlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z @gmail.com. You can also call our voicemail line at 432-363-4742, and we will play it on the show and respond. Thank both of you for coming on and for hanging out with me today and talking about this book, and for Rico for your patience because
that's fine.
Let's do this, and then we couldn't record right away, and ended up that Rick and I had finished it before you and had to go back and listen to it twice. But you know, it was such a pleasure to read or listen to it two times. It was not that big of a deal, but
yeah, the second time around was just as fun as the first.
Yeah, I hope that next time we can do another Sanderson book, maybe the Stormlight Archive, or Angela and I want to start covering the Wheel of Time from the beginning again, because we've already done A New Spring and we did the first book in the series, but we kind of stopped. It's about to become a television series on Amazon Prime, and we're thinking about either starting a whole series on the Wheel of Time or starting a Wheel of Time podcast. We're not sure.
We'll
have to figure that out. But we would love to have you guys read that with us. Rico, I know it was hard for you to get through when you were reading them, but I promise you the audiobooks add a whole other dimension to the story, and it's so much more
enjoyable. Yeah, I'd have to skip ahead to the later books then, because, yeah, I got to book six
Bogged
or seven
down.
Or something, and I was like, I'm out. I have one laying here that's been laying here for like 10 years.
Which one is that?
Oh, I can't see it from where I'm at in my if I move, but it's I think it was about book seven or something, and I got about halfway through it. Most of them are really big. I mean, I love that series. I think one of the hard things for me was it just starts out really strong, and then it just sort of like meanders a lot in the middle. And everyone that I've always talked to, from what you've said and other people, have always said, like, yeah, it does sort of do that in the middle, but then it gets a lot better. You know, that's what they've all.
And then it goes out with a bang.
Yeah,
awesome.
Bang. No, so. I'd be happy to, you know, do another, like, if there's something you want to cover, you know, do like what you did last time, and hopefully I can slide it into my book queue or reading, and then we can do this. Yeah, it's always fun to talk about books. Books are great, and especially these days with audio, I think it adds a lot. And so many of these books, especially this one we just talked about, are very visual or cinematic. You know, so many things like you know, reading, you always just, you know, you do sort of imagine it in your brain, but when you're listening to somebody speak, I think it adds, it makes that process, I think, even a little bit easier in a way where you're listening to the story, and then that the audio part helps you sort of imagine it. It was a lot of fun to talk to you guys today. Everyone should watch Star Trek Discovery, because it's so good.
It is so good this season. Oh,
and Orville is actually pretty good too. I don't know if both of you, I'm sure that, I think Rick, you watched that. Do you watch
Absolutely.
Orville?
Absolutely.
Jen? I don't remember.
No, because like I said, I don't have live TV.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I wasn't sure if you had any other service or anything that you know, like Hulu or something that has that.
Yeah, just Amazon, Netflix, and the CBS all.
So they never got season one of Orville on Netflix? No?
I don't know. It's not up there.
I don't know.
Yet.
Maybe on Hulu then. I think it's on Hulu. But yeah, that's been pretty good this season. But yeah, Discovery's great. I like it very much this year. And the last episode was pretty crazy. These episodes are fun, but boy, they're kind of complicated when you think about it a little bit. And I don't want to say anything or spoil anything, but when you watch the most recent one that was just on a couple of days ago, you'll know what I'm talking about. It's good stuff. Too many good things to watch on.
I know. I was watching a show recently called Homecoming. It has Julia Roberts in it. It's on Amazon Prime. So
is
good.
That a series?
It's a series, and
maybe I did hear about that. Yeah,
it's so good. It's kind of a mystery as well.
Though, right?
It's a little bit in that the technology they're using wipes the memory and reboots soldiers.
Oh.
Okay, yeah, and
so it's sort of programmable soldiers.
Yeah,
it's
a mystery. I don't want to give too much away, but it has such an interesting cinematic feel to it. It feels like an Alfred Hitchcock, just the way they set up the scenes and the music. They pan away from the shot and like go to black, and you can still hear the scene going on when the credits are rolling, and it's just great directing
good.
And everything. It's wonderful. Yeah. It's called Homecoming.
I actually really like watching this show called SWAT. I remember watching SWAT back in the 70s as a kid, and they've rebooted that series, and I think it's actually very well done. So I do like watching that, but I watch everything. I watch NCIS, which I still really enjoy watching. Not watching as many of the Netflix shows as much. I'm at a point where I think there's about 8 shows that I watch, and just staying on top of those is difficult.
Yeah.
So adding new shows, I just don't have the bandwidth for it.
Yeah.
I do watch, there's a show that I actually really do like called Blackish, which is It's a African-American sitcom comedy, but it has a lot of, it tries to bring to the conversation a lot of issues that are going on with race in, you know, in the United States. Mm-hmm. And it does it in a, you know, in a way that I think is consumable and allows you to look at that and then have a conversation, you know, about what was presented. So I actually like watching that particular show. And, you know, Rico just did a podcast on, you know, all of the shows that are on the CW.
So many shows.
So you've got, you know, between Flash and Arrow, and I do watch Black Lightning, by the way.
Supergirl.
I mean, all of those shows I watch, you know. And it's interesting, Rico, you talked about the Black Lightning show. I think the Black Lightning show, the audience for that show, I think is a little bit different than the audience for, you know, Supergirl or Flash. So I know for me as a person of color, I get that show, because it's really about, you know, living in their neighborhood in that city.
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And
understood. Yeah.
So it's really about that, and the superhero piece of it and the powers are factored into that as a response. But the show isn't really about, it's not really about the powers. So
yeah,
it's a different kind of show. I don't think everybody necessarily would plug into it, but I think it's doing pretty well ratings wise. But yeah, there's so much content out there that it's a good time to be alive because there's so much stuff to see
for a nerd, for sure, for a geek or a nerd. Yeah, I'm trying to go see tomorrow that Battle Angel Alita movie. I don't know if either of you guys have seen the previews for that.
I'm seeing it at 7:30 tonight.
Oh, are you? Okay.
Oh yeah.
Is it the one with the animated character that's in?
Yeah,
the game?
Yeah. I think Android? James Cameron's involved in it. Are you are you seeing it in 3D, Rick?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. So I don't, even though they it's sort of a little bit more designed for 3D, I'm still nope. But I am going to try to go see that tomorrow. And then we have Captain Marvel next month.
Oh, yeah. Angela and I are going to be doing the Women of Avengers episode coming up soon in preparation for the Captain Marvel movie.
Oh, that should be excellent.
Looking forward to that. We would love to have some contributions from you if you have any points about any of the Marvel women. Do call in or write us an email.
They're all
dead.
Love
to include them. Not all of them.
That's not true. That's not true. Yeah. Yeah.
Captain Marvel.
Black Widow is fine. Captain Marvel.
I wonder about the mutants, you know. They never talk about them in the Avengers, but you know they occupy the same universe because it's Marvel.
Well,
right?
that's because that's a whole podcast on its own, Jen. But basically because the two movie areas have been owned by different places. So the bottom line, although that's been slightly changed now, so it looks like there may be a possibility to have the X-Men and mutants cross over with the other Marvel characters. But
that would be great, because I know Storm would
they've had to keep them separately for up until this point. So, but yeah, no, that sounds like a fun show. Yeah, give me a heads up before you guys do it, and I'll try to send you a little audio blurb or something.
Sure, it was good to have you on. Yeah, I'm glad we have to do this again at some point.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I'm looking forward to talking. You know, maybe at the very least, we should definitely plan on getting together after the next book and doing another book two of Skyward or whatever the name of the book will be. But yeah, let's do that.
All right, well, that's it for this transmission of Anomaly. Stay subscribed and listen next week for the return of Angela and another fun sci-fi fantasy topic.
Episode 9, The Return of Angela.
Angela Strikes Back.
They have not. Is that why they haven't announced the movie title yet for episode 9? Because they're trying to get Angela to sign off on it. And,
spoiler alert.
Uh-oh. Angela Strikes Back. Okay.
Thank you again, guys. I'm Jen, and you've been listening to Anomaly, the halfway point between Muggle and Geek. Bye.
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 All right. Thanks again to Rico Dosti from Treks and Sci-Fi. You can check out his show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, and at treksf.com. And thanks to Rick Pete for listening, supporting the show, and joining me in this review of Skyward. Just a heads up, I've been sick for the past week or two, and haven't felt like getting together with Angela to record. In order to give myself time to record and edit our next episode about the Women of Marvel, which I'm hoping that you'll send your comments in for, next week I'll be uploading an archived episode from 2010 that is currently only available in our episode archive at anomalypodcast.com. It was a fun discussion about the comical third season episode of The X-Files entitled Jose Chung from Outer Space. Please head over to anomalypodcast.com and click on subscribe at the top of the page to make sure you never miss an episode. As always, you can contact us there at anomalypodcast.com. That's anomalypodcast.com. Or you can call our voicemail line at 432-363-4742. You can also shoot us a voice memo using your smartphone at girlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks@gmail.com. We also like regular old emails, so make sure you send those along. Thanks again for listening. This is Jen, signing off.
I noticed, I wanted to say before I forgot, when I listened especially to your last anomaly, I wanted to say I've noticed your subtle changes on your you're not female and fandom converge anymore, huh? You dropped that?
No, yeah, we dropped it because
you're trying to keep the or go. You tell me.
Oh well, over the years, what we considered was anomaly has changed, and we realized that, you know, we have a good like 50-50 split of women and men listening to the show, and a lot of men call themselves anomalies, and also. Sure. And also, Angela's always hated where female and fandom converge. She says it sounds like a sanitary thing.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow.
Now that's in my head because I've never put
well,
that
well, originally,
together.
it made sense originally because our first logo was an eclipse, the Earth in front of the sun. The two converging and you know, it was the O in anomaly, but our logo changed and incorporated the Andorian pigeon because that was like show art one time and everybody loved it so much. We created a logo for it, but Angela has always hated the Andorian pigeon. So now I have to develop a new logo that has none of that in there.
Wow, Angela.
I know.
Angela strikes back. Okay. I liked listening to your last one. Although I think I posted it up for you guys. You did miss edited it out.
Oh, I missed it. I have to cut it back in and put it back up in the show. Hopefully it'll update for everyone.
But, yeah, I was wondering if you I was curious, did you record those at different times?
Yes. Well, we recorded the show all at once, and then there was a segment we were talking about New Eden that we were going to try to approach it from the angle, you know, that about the religious aspects of the show and what we thought about that. And we weren't really prepared for it. And we thought, let's re-record that and we'll make a separate episode all about how Star Trek handles religion in another show, and we'll prepare for it better because that has to be done well for it to be, you know, entertaining to anyone.
Sure.
And so we redid that, and then we recorded the one before that, right after we watched it. So yeah, I had a bunch of clips I had to like put in, and I missed that one on the third episode, so I need to go put that back in.